Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In 1973, the New York City Police Department created a hostage negotiation team.
It's not up against the gun. It's up against the man's mind.
When you're defusing a human bomb, it's the same as when you're taking apart a real bomb. If you skip a step, it's going to blow up right in your face.
Talk to Me tells the high-stakes true story of the world's first hostage negotiation team. It changed policing forever. Talk to Me.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. No Goldberg today. He's frozen. I guess the property is frozen in Texas, and they're trying to dig their way out. And it's all right. We're gonna get a little recap of what was going on at Arizona at the auction week that's going on there. We got producer Ben in the studio, which is perfect because Ben doesn't know shit about cars.
No, not at all.
But he knows a lot about Dungeons and Dragons, so
yeah,
there's a little bit of that. Let's see. First of all. Daytona 24, the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. I got a chance to watch some of it. I watched like the 45 minutes like recap on NBC Sports or something like that. It was weird for me to try to watch it. Like I was trying to live stream and it wasn't streaming on the website unless you're like a Peacock premium subscriber. So I just thought. Maybe I missed something about it, but I was on the website trying to watch it, so I had to get sort of the recap version of it. And it was obviously interesting to get the 45-minute version of a 24-hour race. That being said, Acura was pretty dominant the whole time. They did a fantastic job. They won first and second overall in their class. The winners were Meyer Shank Racing with their Acura hybrid, the GTP prototype, I believe. The teams are Simon Pagenaud, who's a friend of the show, Elio Castroneves, again, friend of the show, Tom Blomqvist, and Colin Brown. This is the third straight win for Castroneves and the second straight win for, I believe, Pagenaud and Blomqvist and Meyer Shank Racing. So, back-to-back Rolex 24 wins. That's impressive. If you guys get a chance to go back and see that recap, watch like that 45-minute episode of it, and you'll see. And then one of the other groups, like it just came down to the wire. I mean, a 24-hour race, and they were sort of neck and neck coming over the finish line. And it was just about who had a little bit more momentum coming out of that last turn. And for such an intense and such a long race, to have any of the run groups finish and win by a headlight length, like it was just barely. It must have been I don't know, 8 inches, maybe 12 inches of the nose of that car peeking out in front of the second place person. It was just pretty intense. Quite a battle that I saw between Simon Pagenaud and Bourdais. That was pretty impressive as well. I was expecting a little bit more from Porsche. I think they had some car troubles. They had some spinouts, but. Overall, it was a fantastic race. So if you guys get a chance to go back and check that out, you should do that and see kind of how those things go. They did a fantastic recap, and you know, how do you jam 24 hours of racing into, you know, whatever, 40 or 45 minutes of a recap. And it came out pretty good. But I tell you, the hybrid cars, the new hybrid cars that they were running, there's a battery pack that I think that they can swap out. But it's not an easy thing. I think it's about 20, they set it on there, about 20, 22 minutes or something like that to swap that battery pack out. So that was kind of interesting. But it just seemed like, so I believe Meyer Shank Racing qualified on the pole. So they did well there. And then pretty much dominated the whole event. And when you look at that car, it just looked incredibly fast. Maybe it was just super dialed in or the drivers, but doing their thing. But what a team effort. What a great strategy for the entire team, the pit crews, everybody. That just the 24-hour races just require so many more people, and they did such a great job. So anyway, kudos to them. Hopefully we'll get to talk to them soon. Maybe we'll get some of the Meyer Shank Racing team on here and find out a little bit about how they feel about it. I'm sure they're super happy and super tired. But it'd be great to be able to chat with them again. Maybe talk to Acura as well, what's going on with that car, because pretty cool. We saw in Monterey, during Monterey Car Week, Acura usually has a small event that they host. And you've heard us say it before. It's one of our favorite events to go to. Adam Kroll and I, Loxamana, Sonny, you know, we like to go over to that event. Sean comes with us usually as well. And, in each year they have some sort of announcement, Acura Integra, new EV SUV that's going to be coming out. But they showed us this car, the prototype race car there, and kind of got to walk through it and hear a little bit about the aero, the technology, the hybrid system, and just kind of what it took to get that car together. So it was super impressive to see that thing in person and then be able to see it perform at the Rolex 24. So congratulations to them and everybody else who got to participate and do well and walk away without any issues. That's always a big win. So that's that. So Rolex 24. Before I forget, Hot Rod Power Tour, if you guys are in the Hot Rod Power Tour, that's going to be scheduled for June of this year. It's going to be, I believe it starts Monday, June 12th at Atlanta Motor Speedway in Atlanta, Georgia, and it'll run through Friday, and it'll wrap up at Bristol Motor Speedway. People ask me if I have ever done Power Tour or if I want to do Power Tour, and the answer is no, I've never done Power Tour. Yes, it sounds great. I'd love to do Power Tour. If I did it, I'd want to bring one of my own cars. But honestly, it's just like taking a week off and how much more time it takes to get a car over to the East Coast, because, you know, being in California, it's just, I don't know. They just never really do a West Coast Power Tour. I think they did something in the past, but we don't get too much of that out here. And I get it, a lot of the shops and the racing teams and all the good fun stops are out there. So and then who knows, I don't even know if you can drive through California with a Power Tour without getting yelled at by the government. So we have Monterey Car Week, they have Power Tour, and I'd like to do Power Tour at some point, but I have not been able to do it yet. All right, so the Mustang Mach 1. Let's get into that for a second. I am happy to say that we've figured out the tuning issue. And again, it wasn't, if you were following along, it wasn't the tune itself. It was something to do with uploading the tune into the computer and the computer not taking it. And it seemed to be an issue with a handful of Mach 1s. And for lack of better term, oftentimes people will take a tune and just kind of force it into the computer and get it to like override things and kind of shove its way into the computer, and that doesn't always work. And in this case, that was not that did not work. So after many, many attempts and going back and looking at code, and instead of just trying to shove this tune in there, we spent more time looking at pretty much every line of code and then the factory stuff and going through and seeing what could be jamming it up. And there literally was one line of code in there that was causing the error. And it took a while to find, obviously. We've been trying to do it since SEMA. It took a while to find. We found it. It seems to have fixed the problem. I've asked Galpin Autosports to put a few miles on the car, see if it's running well, make sure we freshen up, change the oil and spark plugs and get it dialed in, and then check with the tuners. And we actually made a few revisions to the code already, about three revisions to it. So right now it seems to be good. It seems to be drivable. I have not driven it yet. We just figured this out yesterday as we're recording this. So they've been doing a little bit of testing on it. I think if you, I'll get some posts and some videos and stuff on my social media at Motorator, so you can hear this thing and see it. We'll do a little bit, and then I'll do some more over time. There was a lot of help, a lot of great sponsors that we want to call out and give credit to for this car. So I'm excited to drive it. I think what we're going to do is I got a few things to finish up on the car, some stuff on the audio system, and I kind of want to break in this tune and the turbos and the whole system a little bit. And then I will take it over to our friend Ray McClellan at Full Throttle Customs. I spoke to him on the phone the other day and said, why don't we get this thing on the dyno? Let's see what kind of numbers we're getting out of it. We'll just double check the tune. Again, the driving and stuff that I do now is we're sort of treating it as a break-in again, and not really, full throttle, runs with this thing. So I'm not looking to wind this thing out to, every little bit of RPM we can, but just make sure we don't hurt anything and it starts to just run reliably and there's no leaks and stuff. And it's expected to. I'm fully expecting to do a few little revisions and maybe work out a few little bugs, but then we'll take it to Ray's place. We'll get it up on the dyno. We'll go through it again and we'll check the tune. We'll check everything, that nothing loosened up or whatever. And then, report back what kind of numbers we're getting, but I'm excited about that. That's going to be a fun car to drive. As crazy as the GT500 is, and the DCT transmission, and it works well. And by the way, that DCT transmission works well in stock form, but when you do calibrate it for performance, there is a nice difference there. I know the guys at Shelby American in Vegas have done a few. I drove one that had the calibration in it. Their car, instead of 760 horsepower factory, they've dialed it to about 800 with just some tune and calibrations on the transmission, and it's incredible. But when getting the Mach 1, I wanted to get the manual transmission. And the Mach 1 had the Tremec, which is the upgraded, beefier transmission over the Getrag transmission. So this has the transmission, I believe, from the GT350 and the GT350R. And then we brought the power up through turbos. They're pretty much beyond par with what the GT500 is. But I just wanted to do it with a manual transmission. And who knows what sort of weak links we'll find. Maybe half shafts, maybe clutch. And I'm expecting to be able to upgrade those things at some point. I'm not really thinking I'm going to run slicks on it and take it to the drag strip. I think it'd be fine, and I think it would be fast, but that's a little bit harsher on the whole drive train. So probably going to avoid doing that. And plus, we built the car, for SEMA, and It's got a stereo and stuff. It's got a little extra weight. It's got a lot of sound deadener and stuff in it. Hopefully offset a little bit with some of the carbon fiber pieces and the carbon fiber hood and the K-member. So to get the – we'll get into that as well on future episodes and on the social media. You'll see that we made some suspension upgrades with Steeda. Fantastic stuff. Steeda has been around for a long time. But the turbo kit requires a new K-member to fit it properly, and there's tabs welded onto the K-member that attach to the turbos to mount them. So the advantage there, of course, is we were able to reduce some of the weight with that Steeda K-member to make up for a little bit of the weight that the turbos and intercooler add to it. And then the carbon fiber hood, I'm going to have to put a little bit of the heat shielding underneath the carbon fiber hood so we don't screw up the hood and screw up the paint on it. But I am curious if we weigh the vehicle between adding the weight, reducing the weight, do we kind of break even on it? As far as like the stereo stuff, yeah, we built some stuff in the back of the car. We didn't make it super heavy. We weren't building, you know, a box for four 12-inch woofers and take up the whole trunk. The trunk is functional. We took out the factory subwoofer and built our own enclosure for two 10-inch woofers. And it really takes up about the same space as the factory enclosure. It's a little bit bigger, but I'll show you the photos of that thing. You guys can see what I'm talking about. And that was just a lot of like molding it to the shape of the car, the wheel well and the trunk, the side of the trunk, and just making really, really good use of that space. So I don't think we added a bunch of weight there. But if we were going to add some weight, I don't mind adding weight to the rear of the car. Hopefully it gives us a little bit better traction, a little bit better weight balance. But yeah, that's it for the Mach 1. Kind of excited about that. I'll get some photos and stuff up on social media and at least some sounds so you can kind of hear this thing. The guys at Galpin Autosports sent me a video file and you can hear it. Actually, maybe Ben, you can bring it up. Go to Instagram to Galpin Autosports and see if you can find the video clip. It's funny. It's, you know, the top half of the video is my car and the bottom half is like a monkey wearing headphones, enjoying the sound of that car. And if you find that, just play it here, cause I want you to hear this thing get on the exhaust, and hear those turbos wind up. I was expecting it to be overall a little bit quieter. We have a Magnaflow exhaust on it. I assume when they ran it with the exhaust open. To get this video file. But again, I wasn't there when they did that. So I can't say for sure. Yeah. So turn the volume up on that thing and play that here. And let's give it a little. The video's got two clips. The first is the front of the car and you hear the turbos wind up. And then the second clip that seems a little quieter is like a chase vehicle or something from behind the car. All right. One more time. Here we go. Yeah. All right. That's good. Anyway, it's badass, right? So that car should be making like somewhere around 750 horsepower, probably crank horsepower, and I don't know. It's gonna be fun to drive. I haven't driven it yet. I haven't even seen the car in a couple of months. I mean, you know, I stopped over for a few things, but by the way, it looks like a lot of likes. Seems like a lot of people seem to be liking that video there, because that was just posted yesterday, and I mean, I can't see it for sure, but that's a few. What does that say?
9,000 likes.
9,000 likes. Yeah, that's pretty good. So, fantastic. So, I guess we should post more of that stuff. all right. Let me give a quick shout out to our friends at O'Reilly. Welcome back to the show, O'Reilly Auto Parts. We always love it when you guys are here. So, it's O'Reilly's awards It's their O-Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You can shop in-store or online to get points and rewards sent straight to your phone or your email inbox. You can get 2, 3, or 4 times bonus points on select purchases to get you to your next reward level even faster. You can receive a $5 reward for every 150 O-Rewards points that you earn. And if you're already an O-Rewards member and not receiving your rewards, just add your email or your mobile number, your phone number, and you'll automatically get a $10 reward just for updating your existing account. So add your information. It's an easy $10. And then as you add more rewards, earn that 150 points, you'll get the extra $5 reward bonus there. So sign up is quick and easy. It's O'ReillyAuto.com, or you can do it in store. Again, O'ReillyAuto.com or right in the store. All right. So what was going on in Scottsdale, the auctions? There was some, of course, Barrett Jackson. I just went out for the main weekend. I missed RM. This was kind of a weird thing because I completely forgot that RM moved to a little bit earlier in the week. And I was at that SEMA conference last week. So I just flew over there Thursday night and had missed RM. But very successful. Now, keep in mind, RM still does reserves on cars, on some cars, unlike Barrett Jackson, that is all no reserve now. And, you know, puts a lot of trust into those auction companies to get you the best price that they can. But total sales for RM was $44,873,140. There was a 91% sell through rate, which is, very high. Bidders from over 22 countries. There is 29% new buyers and 15% new bidders, which is impressive. Some of the top sales, the LaFerrari, that was a big seller. The LaFerrari did $4,075,000. The Lamborghini Miura SV. This is interesting because the Adams SV we sold years ago for about $2 million, and the Lamborghinis have gone up and then plateaued and then kind of gone up and not really dropped too much, but have gone up and kind of leveled out, and people were holding them. Listen, it was one of those cases where we wanted to buy the Porsche 935. We had to sell a bunch of the Lamborghinis to get it. Sold it for $2 million. Now, this particular Miura SV restored beautifully. Really, really nice. The blue Note with the silver rockers, $3.58 million all in. That was super impressive. So good for them. But the one that really stood out was the 69 Chevrolet Corvette Stingray, the ZL1 convertible. First off, I don't expect a Corvette Stingray to pop up at an RM auction. It's not the normal go-to cars for them. I would expect it at Barrett, expect it at Mecum, even these high-dollar ones. The Corvette Stingray, the ZL1, though, this is the all-aluminum big block car. This is, I believe, two of them were made. It's a beautiful car. It's the orange one, but a 69, that body style, it's just not, you don't normally consider that the big money car. It's not the first gen. It's not the 63 split window, but
yeah, one of two made.
Yeah. One of two. Yeah. One of two made, $3,140,000. I mean, just an incredible dollar amount for a 69 Corvette, but obviously you're getting a very, very special car. You know, we saw a 959 Comfort, $1.68 million. We saw Ferrari F12 TDF, $1.24 million. Ferrari F40, they had a Ferrari F40 there, went for $2,150,000. Barrett had an F40 as well that I think went for $2,526,000, something. I'll find that in a minute. But overall, it seemed good. It seemed impressive. I don't know if that's record numbers for them, but they did very, very well. Now, over at Barrett Jackson, They also did an amazing event, always raise money for charity, big money for charity. The first 2024 Mustang, I think it was a charity car. So you get VIN number one, you buy the car, the rest goes to charity. I think it sold for something like $490,000. So that's good for the charity. The Barrett Jackson auction in cars did $184.2 million. It was 1,907 no reserve cars, 100% sell-through rate, obviously, because it's all no reserve. They raised almost $1.9 million for charity. I think it was like $1.89 million for charity. And by the way, Barrett Jackson's lifetime, they've raised $150 million for charity. That's impressive. So the overall, the auction did $190.6 million. Some of that is the memorabilia, $184.2 million in cars. Some of the standout cars there were the modern supercars were pulling some pretty impressive money. They were they always seemed to be at the top of the charts. A Lamborghini Aventador SVJ, that's $671,000. It's about what I was expecting for that. A new Ferrari SF90, $742,000. But then the Lexus LFA was the number eight top seller. This is impressive. The Lexus LFA is a fantastic car. I've driven a few of them. It sounds amazing. $748,000 for the LFA. There was a 69 Camaro ZL1 for $770,000. The one that's not on this list that really caught our attention was there was a Baldwin Motion 68 Camaro. Our friends Brad Fanshaw and a friend of his were really interested in that car. They went and tried to bid on the car. Brad has a Baldwin Motion Vega. That's just kind of a badass car. And they went down to bid on this thing, and I think it sold for $540,000. I think it's like, yeah, $580,000 or $585,000 or something like that all in. And the way it went down, because these auctions move so fast that if you pause for a minute to kind of think about it or take another look at the car, if you're up on the auction block, you're on the stage, it goes by very quickly. And I remember the guys were up there and they were at like 5:30. Someone hit 5:40 and they were like, well, 5:40 is more than what we want to pay. Should we go to 5:40? And by the time they even turned around to get their bid in again, boom, sold. They moved it quickly. Now, it doesn't mean they would have got it for 550. It just means someone bidding against them might have went higher, might have ended up being at 650. But I think when they were done and that kind of set in, they were like, that's kind of bummed. Like, I really would have liked to have that car. They have a nice collection, these guys, of some pretty rare cars, and they kind of fit in. They had a Yenko car and they had a Copo car, and they didn't have the Baldwin Motion Camaro, would have fit perfectly into that. So bummed that they missed that car, but it was kind of fun to see. The Ken Miles Mustang, this is an interesting car. So it's a 66 Shelby notchback. This is the coupe, not the fastback. This was a car that was raced. I think it did some Group 2, some Trans Am racing. It was built for Ken Miles, but Ken Miles had his accident and died before he got a chance to race the car. So it has an interesting Ken Miles story, but it doesn't have any Ken Miles racing history. We'll find out from Adam when we do the show with him this week where we came in, because we guessed what the prices were going to be on that car. But it sold for $770,000 all in. I think that's high for that car. I mean, it's good money. And I think it helps Shelby cars, Shelby memorabilia. Anything with Ken Miles, I think – it kind of proves the point that that's rare. It's just there's not a lot of Ken Miles stuff out there. So when you have an opportunity to pick it up, it's going to be valuable. Honestly, there's tons of Shelby stuff out there, and there's even tons of McQueen stuff out there. For Adam's argument, there's quite a bit of Newman stuff out there. We've only scratched the surface on Newman. I mean, we've got definitely more Newman racing memorabilia and cars than anything else. But there's a lot of, you know, McQueen's a celebrity. Newman's a celebrity. I would argue that Shelby is a celebrity. Ken Miles never really was, at least not until the movie came out. So it wasn't like he's got all this movie memorabilia and stuff for other companies and whatever. So there's not quite nearly as much stuff out there. So anyway, $770,000 for the Ken Miles car. There's a couple of modern day Ford GTs, the Carbon Series cars. They both went for $1.32 million. There was a Porsche Carrera GT, $1.595 million. And then the top seller at Barrett Jackson was an F40. $2,750,000 for the F40. And so $2,750 for that F40. That was the gray one that they've been trying to sell for a while. The Ferrari F40 at RM was $2,150. So $600,000 difference. But this was the gray, the Nardo gray, I believe, F40 that went at Barrett Jackson. Interesting car. I believe it was raced a bit. I don't know that it's street legal anymore. It hopped around at a couple of auctions, and I believe RM was trying to sell it. And maybe they're doing a private sale on it, and they weren't unable to find the buyer at the right price. So like the owner was just like, I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to take it to Barrett Jackson. I'm going to list it with no reserve, and walked away with $2,750,000 for it. Have no idea what they wanted for that car, but that seems like a pretty good price. Barrett Jackson was great. As we've always said, it's a huge social event. It's fun to check out. It's kind of a state fair meets car auction. It seemed good. It seemed busy. I think overall sales were down a little bit than last year, coming off of the pandemic. People were, spending a lot. And now with interest rates going up and inflation, and it's settled down a little bit. By the way, not a ton. I think the overall sales last year were like $200 million, and this was about $190 million. During the pandemic, when they did sort of the limited version of the auction, limited attendance, that was about $100 million bucks, so about half, but still a huge revenue generator. Speaking of auctions, the final numbers came in for Bring a Trailer for last year's sales. I think we might have mentioned it on one of the other shows, but $1.35 billion in total sales on Bring a Trailer last year. The largest for any auction company. Now, their fee structure and everything is different than a lot of these other companies that have the whole events. As you guys know, with Bring a Trailer, it's 5% up to $5,000 for most of the cars. So that's it. Whereas, RM, Barrett Jackson, these guys get 10% from the buyer, and there's usually something from the seller. It could vary from the seller's standpoint, but often starts at about 10%. So if you see one of these cars go up, and it's a $1 million car, you got to look at it as the seller's getting 10% less than the $1 million, and the buyer's paying 10% more than the hammer price, $1 million. So interesting how that works. The house gets about 20%. It's quite the business. Let's see. What else is going on? you know, well, I mean, we'll keep the show a little bit shorter today, but driving a couple of the Mercedes vehicles, the Mercedes-Benz, you know, we did a lot with Mercedes years ago back when Adam was doing the car show, that TV show. If you watch that show and you see in the opening credits, you see the SLS Gullwing in that car, the modern day one, the SLS. We were out there just doing donuts with the doors open to see what would happen. By the way, the doors start to close. When you're doing donuts, the centrifugal force starts to close the doors. You kind of have to jam your foot in there to keep them open if you wanted to do donuts with the doors open. But it is possible. You can do it. So I brought that car out there to do that. And it's been a minute since we got in with Mercedes, and I miss them. And it's nice to kind of test with them. I mentioned a while ago I drove the 580, the EQS 580 AMG, which is their all-electric SUV with the three rows. Interesting. A very, very cool car. Definitely at the high end, it's about $150,000. I'm driving the sedan now. That's the all-electric sedan. It's a little bigger than I thought. It's nice. It's roomy. It's a big four-door hatchback. The front is – the styling on the front, it's kind of hit or miss. You might like it. You might not like it. From certain angles, it looks a little off to me. But overall, it's not bad. But a lot of it has been – it's really about the aerodynamics. They really did a low drag coefficient on this car. They want to make it as slick as possible, and it feels good, and it's quiet, and it's fast, and both of these vehicles, the SUV and the sedan, have this massive piece of glass on the dash that goes from one end of the car to the other width-wise. And within there's basically three screens. There's the gauge cluster in front of the driver. There's the main infotainment system, and then another screen placed in front of the passenger, but a single piece of glass laid over the whole thing. Big touch screens all around, and so the passenger can control things as well. So it's nice. It's impressive. I think if you get into one of these things and you're expecting an S-Class, it's not quite there. They definitely invested money into the electronic a powertrain and try to get this within a certain price point, even at $150,000 with quite a few options. Interesting car, an impressive car, and more of a learning curve, I would say, for that whole infotainment system than I've seen in most cars of the past couple of years. But not impossible, just takes a little bit more time to figure things out and how all the buttons and stuff work. Again, if I had more time to like read through the manual or get the crash course from a dealer if I was buying it, you'd want them to walk you through as much as they could. But just getting into it and kind of learning it on the go, it has a little bit more of a learning curve. And then there's the AMG SL63. The SL been around for a long time. This is the convertible, I want to say sports car, but it's always been kind of a GT car. But now with, you know, the 4 liter and the big power and the, you know, 0 to 60 and I don't know, 3-point-something seconds, it's kind of a beast. It kind of just feels like a German sports car. It's still, as you'd expect with Mercedes, it has a very kind of heavy feeling, kind of solid feeling to it. But now all-wheel drive, so it gets off the line like a Banshee, and it just hauls. It is impressive. It has the same infotainment system, basically, that's in the EVs, but not the giant piece of glass going across. It's a little bit more of a conventional setup. It has sort of this iPad looking screen on the dash, but kind of a neat feature is it kind of leans back so you can get a good view of it and easy to use the controls and touch while you're driving. And then when you put the top down, it starts to stand up straighter. It moves. It's hinged on the bottom. So it goes from looking like – it kind of looks like the tacked-on kind of floating screen. But unlike most cars that have that, this actually moves, and there's a reason for it. And that's to remove the glare when you put the top down. So you'll want to see that. I'll show you a bit of that. And it just sounds – this car just sounds awesome. It's got – it's just got such a fantastic sound on it now. When you put the top down and open the exhaust, the thing's a beast. I got a little bit of a sound file that I'll put up on my social media as well. But it's just fun to drive. It had this bright blue color, and it got a lot of attention. We took it out to a neighborhood nearby just to shoot some photographs of it. And there was some other groups out there shooting pictures of Porsches and a couple of other cars. And I don't know how we all kind of ended up at the same place. I guess we just sort of find these little nooks and crannies, corners of the neighborhood to shoot photos. But when we fired the car up, man, they were impressed. They're like, damn, that's the Mercedes. I was like, yeah, see, AMG. Sounds good. All right. So I think that's going to be it for today. We should get Goldberg back next week. Hopefully he's thawing out over there. Good job, Ben. Super chatty. Sorry. He's running around.
Doing
in
my show prep for the other show.
He's got more shows on the way. No, I'm just messing with you. It's all good. Guys, thanks so much. Like I said, we'll get some photos up on social media. Follow me at Motorator on Instagram, and I guess Facebook as well, wherever you want. And we'll see you guys next week. Until next time, keep the air and the spare and the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.